do you make a broken family whole? The same way you make a nation whole.
The prospective First Lady of the United States speaks out at the Democratic National Convention. This is Thursday, the 20th of August, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, President Trump cancels trade talks with China while leveling more criticism at Joe Biden. Taiwan accuses China of major cyber attacks. And airlines make changes aimed at bringing you back to air travel. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Democrats formally nominated former Vice President Joe Biden as their candidate for president Tuesday during the second night of an extraordinary virtual convention that included criticism of President Donald Trump from Republicans as well as Democrats, and personal stories of Biden as a public servant, father, and husband. VOA White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekaswara has more from Wilmington, Delaware.
I have always loved
the capping the second night of the Democratic National Convention. The woman who could be the next First Lady, Jill Biden, highlighted the pandemic's impact on children and families and spoke of her husband from a high school classroom where she used to teach in the Biden's hometown of Wilmington, Delaware.
How do you make a broken family whole? The same way you make a nation whole. With love and understanding and with small acts of kindness.
Just as on the first night, Republicans lined up to support Biden, including Colin Powell, the retired four-star general and Secretary of State under President George W. Bush, who said Joe Biden would make a responsible commander-in-chief.
For Joe Biden, that doesn't need teaching. It comes from the experience he shares with millions of military families, sending his beloved son off to war and praying to God he would come home safe.
Their presence highlights the wide tent message of unity that Democrats want to convey, targeting moderate Republicans and independents. But ideology is not the only divide the Democrats are seeking to bridge.
On Tuesday, they focus on another divide, the generational gap, where old guards will share the spotlight with young rising stars.
You know what Donald Trump will do with four more years? Blame, bully, and belittle. And you know what Joe Biden will do? Build back better.
We stand with Joe Biden because this isn't just about defeating Donald Trump. We are in this to win for America.
And the great state of Alabama cast 52 votes.
Everything is done virtually, including the traditional roll call, where delegates cast their votes based on the result of each state's primary or caucus.
We're going to look back on this and call it the Zoom convention, because I think some of the moments that might have seemed awkward or might have seemed like the picture was a little grainy, I think that's part of many of our lived experience now. And more to the point, is in fact how we are having relationships in some cases with coworkers, family members, people that we care about.
On Wednesday night, the Democratic National Convention will continue with California Senator Kamala Harris delivering her acceptance speech as the vice presidential nominee, making history as the first Black woman and South Asian American on a national U.S. political ticket. From Wilmington, Delaware, Patsy Wiedekaswara, VOA News.
A resounding message.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. China's military says the latest U.S. Navy sailing near Chinese-claimed Taiwan was extremely dangerous, and stirring up such trouble was in neither country's interest. Two large and shallow earthquakes strike off Indonesia's Sumatra Island. The Australian government reaches a deal to secure 25 million doses of a potential COVID-19 vaccine. Nepal temporarily bans transport and gatherings in its capital city due to a rise in coronavirus. The United States and China will allow air carriers to double flights between the two nations. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. President Donald Trump said he did not want to deal with China now and that canceling the trade deal was a possibility. Answering a reporter's question during his Yuma, Arizona visit Tuesday, Trump appeared to be making the statement over China's handling of the coronavirus, as well as using the opportunity to take a shot at Joe Biden.
U.S.-China talks were postponed. You were supposed to have a review of this trade deal.
I postponed them. I postponed talks with China. You know why? I don't want to deal with them now. I don't want to deal with them now. With what they did to this country and to the world, I don't want to talk to China right now, okay?
Are you going to pull out of the trade deal?
We'll see. We'll see what happens. Look, let me tell you. What China did to the world was not even thinkable. They could have stopped it. They stopped it from going into China, and they should have stopped it. So that's correct. I canceled talks with China.
President,
by the way, Sleepy Joe Biden never got in. China would own the United States. They'd own it. They'd own every one of these people. They'd own this building. They'd own the United States because Biden would give them everything for two reasons. Number one, he's not smart. And number two, he's weak. China would own our country.
Trump was in Arizona for a briefing on the construction of the border wall, where he repeated a key campaign promise from 4 years ago that Mexico would ultimately pay for the wall's construction. Taiwan said Wednesday that China was behind cyber attacks and an infiltration aiming to steal important data from the government. Edward Baran reports.
Taiwan said on Wednesday that hacking groups linked to the Chinese government had attacked at least 10 government agencies and thousands of email accounts of government officials to steal important data. Taiwan has been urging its people to be alert for what officials call omnipresent infiltration from China. That includes Beijing-backed media campaigns and cyber attacks against the island that China considers its territory. Liu Chai-zung from Taiwan's Investigation Bureau said some of the IP addresses used are those connected to mainland hacking groups, and that they were aiming to acquire important government documents and data. Liu's office said it had not been able to identify what data was stolen as the hackers concealed their tracks.
Reuters' Edward Baran reported. Happening now in Asia, South Korea Wednesday reported 297 new coronavirus cases, its biggest daily increase since early March, as the country begins restricting gatherings in the greater capital area amid fears that transmissions are getting out of control. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Five different vaccines against COVID-19 are in the last phase of testing. They follow three different strategies, including novel approaches. VOA's Steve Barragona has a look at how they aim to work.
The main target for every vaccine against the coronavirus is the spike protein that sticks out of its surface. That's the part the virus uses to get into our cells, causing an infection. The goal is to get the immune system to make antibodies that stick to that spike, says University of Maryland infectious disease doctor Jim Campbell.
It will prevent the virus from being able to enter your cells. And that is like, you know, that's the holy grail here.
One route to this holy grail is by injecting whole inactivated viruses, says vaccine expert Paul Offit.
Take a virus and you grow it up, and then you inactivate it with a chemical. By inactivate it, what that means is the virus cannot reproduce itself. That's the way that we make the hepatitis A vaccine. It's the way that we make the polio vaccine. It's the way that we make the rabies vaccine.
The immune system makes antibodies to the inactivated virus, so it will be ready if the real thing comes around. Two Chinese companies are trying this method. A newer method uses a different, weaker virus as a delivery vehicle. It takes advantage of how simple a virus really is.
It's just a ball, essentially, that holds within it genetic code. There's nothing else to the virus.
That genetic code is instructions for making more of the virus. Scientists replaced the genetic code of the weak virus with instructions for just the spike protein from the coronavirus.
So what happens is the virus attaches to cells, enters cells, and then that protein, the spike protein, is made inside your cells. So you make an immune response to the spike. You make the spike protein, and you make an immune response to the spike protein. That's the way the Ebola vaccine was made successfully.
And that's the strategy the Oxford University AstraZeneca vaccine uses. The third and newest method delivers the genetic blueprint directly into cells inside microscopic fat bubbles.
You just directly inject that gene, which is then taken up by muscle cells, and that gene is then translated to the protein, which you then make an immune response to. Those are the mRNA vaccines that are being made by Pfizer and Moderna and others.
There's no guarantee any of them will be safe and effective. That's why tests on tens of thousands of people are underway now. Experts are hopeful for results by the end of the year. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. A new wave of flooding in the Yangtze River passed through China's southwestern Chongqing municipality Wednesday. The flood is the largest in Chongqing since 1981, according to authorities. All of the big stories come your way throughout the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. In an effort to woo passengers into flying again, U.S. Airlines announced they are taking some new steps to protect travelers from the coronavirus. This comes as the number of people flying has once again decreased. Airlines such as Delta recently posted a nearly $6 billion loss for the second quarter. Many airlines are encouraging employees to retire early to reduce the need for layoffs in October when federal payroll aid expires. More from VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo.
For months, airlines have been trying to assure a frightened public that flying is safe and won't expose them to the coronavirus. But people are still not convinced as the number of confirmed cases in the U.S. surpassed 5.4 million this week and more than 170,000 have died from the illness. Delta Airlines flight attendant Jason Bond says he's never seen anything like this in his 23-year career.
I've been through SARS, bird flu, all those different flus that have come out, 9/11. I think this is even worse than, if you talk to other pilots and flight attendants, this is worse than 9/11.
Industry experts say air travel has not picked up as it should, even after a few months of gradual increase. Last week, the number of people passing through U.S. airports fell for the first time since April. Airline executives cited a resurgence in reported coronavirus infections as a reason for the decline.
No matter how much time it takes, we will always go through the cleaning process and make sure the cleaning specs are met. And if that means that we will compromise an on-time departure so that our aircraft are clean, we will do just that.
Delta recently announced additional health screenings for passengers who say they cannot wear a mask for health reasons before being allowed to board a plane.
We want to ensure that our customers and our employees feel safe and coming to work and being in an airport environment that's clean and disinfected and knowing that we're taking every precaution possible.
United Airlines said it will increase the flow of air through filtration systems during boarding and deplaning, which it said would make the air cleaner than in restaurants and grocery stores. To create more space between passengers, Delta, Southwest, and JetBlue are keeping some seats open, even if it's not the 2 meters of social distancing that health experts recommend. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Are my pets safe from coronavirus? There's no current evidence that cats and dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
You're listening to VOA Asia. Many countries, school administrators, and families are facing the troubling problem of when and how to reopen schools. Opening up the schools with a lingering COVID danger is a difficult challenge. Saba Shah Khan tries to find out if the parents, students, and schools are ready.
Only a few weeks left of the summer vacation, but in some ways, it feels like an extension of the school shutdowns that happened all across the United States in March.
There's more family time, but for school, it's just weird not getting like seeing the friends face to face.
The school break has been unique for this generation, but as the new school year is set to begin, the questions now are, when is it safe for kids to go back to school, or is virtual learning the way to go?
Sending kids to a setup where social distancing could not be followed, where a lot of kids from different families will come together, sounds risky. And as a parent and a doctor, I feel that should be the last step.
While Arnav is looking forward to seeing his friends, he's also afraid of bringing the virus home.
I'm scared of my family dying, like my elder people.
Chavi and her husband are both physicians. Because they work with COVID patients, the couple had a hard time finding babysitters during the summer break. According to a report by McKinsey & Company, 26.8 million people, that is 16% of the American workforce, depends on schools and childcare so they can work.
The fact is that schools and preschools play an important role in the U.S. economy. As per the National Center for Education Statistics, more than 56.6 million students will attend primary, middle, and high schools across the country.
But with uncertainty about the spread of the virus, many school districts are looking for the safest option to reopen while ensuring that children move ahead with their learning. The decision lies with many of America's 98,000 school superintendents.
A lot of our teachers and a lot of our parents are asking for a virtual option. There's differing opinions on what's acceptable as far as social distancing space between 3 feet and 6 feet, and whether we can have congregate eating or sports contact or anything of the like.
The lack of funding and resources poses a challenge for other school districts with limited resources. Harris's district has 1,000 students. 300 do not have computers at home, while 40 don't have access to the internet. There's also worry about the economic impact of not opening schools.
Well, if we shutter schools, now parents are home with their kids and that they can't go to work. And now the food lines get longer and longer and longer.
Despite all the uncertainty and stress, these high school students found joy, even though they graduated months behind schedule.
We're thankful that we can have a graduation. Obviously, it's not the ideal situation, but we're making the most of it.
The students are still hopeful, despite the pandemic. Saba Shah Khan, VOA News, Voorhees, New Jersey.
This is VOA Asia. The World Meteorological Organization says temperatures of 54.4 degrees Celsius reported Sunday at Furnace Creek, Death Valley, in the U.S. state of California, may be the third hottest on Earth. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Weather Agency is assembling an international team of atmospheric scientists to verify the temperatures reported in Death Valley are legitimate. The WMO says that is a very complicated procedure and is likely to take several months to complete. If validated, however, world meteorological scientists say it would qualify as the third highest temperature ever recorded on the planet. The hottest temperature ever recorded was 56.7 degrees in Death Valley on July 10, 1913. The second hottest was set in July 1931 in Kabylie, Tunisia, at 55 degrees. The scorching conditions came as sweltering heat grips the west coast of the United States, with temperatures reaching the high 30s and 40s. WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says the U.S. National Weather Service expects the intense heat to continue for a while.
The National Weather Service in Las Vegas, which covers the Death Valley area, tweeted overnight, "We are in the midst of a long-duration extreme heat event. Another run at 130 degree Fahrenheit plus temperatures in Death Valley remains possible."
The WMO says extreme high temperatures are part of a global trend. It says July was the hottest July on record for the Northern Hemisphere, and Arctic sea ice was the lowest on record for the month. It says Western and Central Europe experienced another heat wave last week. Japan recorded temperatures of more than 40 degrees Monday at Hamamatsu, and Siberia has experienced a prolonged heat wave. The WMO currently is in the process of verifying the record high temperature of 38 degrees reported June 20th in Siberia. If proven, that would be the highest temperature ever recorded in the Arctic Circle. Nullis tells VOA the relationship between climate change and the extreme weather events is inescapable.
We are seeing more intense, extreme heat waves, more frequent. They're starting earlier, they're finishing later than in the past. This is consistent with everything that we expect from climate change. So of all the extreme weather events that we see, the relationship between heat and climate change is the one which is the clearest.
Man-made climate change is caused by the emission of greenhouse gases, including carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, and methane into the atmosphere. Scientists agree that drastically cutting greenhouse gas emissions is the key to tackling global warming. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As the impact of COVID-19 takes a toll on Malaysia's economy, many workers are starting up their own companies. As Dave Grunebaum reports, that country is seeing a surge in micro-businesses.
Mornings for Chris Terry of Halo Donut means it's time to hand-make sweet treats with flavors such as lemon pop, cinnamon affair, along with burnt and salty. Everything is made from scratch.
So the financial downturn helped me revisit my passion.
Unemployed in March, this former video producer with a zeal for cooking started making donuts for friends.
So one of my best friends said, "Now, Chris, I think you should sell this. I think you should make this into a business."
Terry started out at her mother's kitchen, but quickly outgrew it. So now she rents space in a shared commercial kitchen. It only costs about $400 US a month and includes all of the pots and pans, which keeps the expenses down.
We started it in a shared kitchen because it's low risk and it's low investment. I think it's a perfect way to start a business.
While various new businesses have different backstories, Terry's situation fits a trend that shows a rapidly growing number of micro-businesses in Malaysia.
Businesses that are starting up from even the garage or their house, their kitchen, their home kitchen.
Raymond Wu of the Malaysia Retail Chain Association says there are easily tens of thousands of micro-businesses that have started up in the country since the economic downturn started in March. The people behind them often need a low-risk way of earning income after being laid off or forced to take a pay cut.
Could be doing marketing advisory businesses, website photography, services that they actually know as a hobby, and then moving that hobby and monetizing it.
One burnt and salty.
At a recent pop-up event, customers sunk their teeth into Terry's donuts at prices ranging from $1 to $2 each, depending on the flavor.
One thing is the fluffiness of the donut, and the flavor is always something out of the ordinary.
Halo Donut has not quite reached the break-even point yet, but Terry expects to turn this into a profitable business within a few months. She currently has one part-time kitchen worker, but plans on hiring more soon. For VOA News, Dave Grunebaum, Petaling Jaya, Malaysia.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day and stay safe.